Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
My name is Lika Maikau and I'm here with Chris Gordon on Help Laser Biz.
Everyone, I have the honor and the pleasure of the company of Lika Maikau, filmmaker, award-winning filmmaker. So welcome to Help Laser Biz, Lika. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So we're here to talk about your latest film short, which we will get onto, but it's obviously qualifying for consideration for the 2021 Academy Awards as well, which is no mean feat. So, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I know I'm going to get this wrong as well because I so forgive me. Is it Molokai Bound? Molokai Bound?
Good. Yeah, Molokai Bound.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. It's Molokai, is it? Molokai. Cool, excellent. It's based from Hawaiian culture. So I say, please forgive my mispronunciation for Hawaiian words. They're not things I actually come across every day, but it's a fantastic. I do love Hawaii, and you've got a very individual culture there, which is very long-standing culture. So kind of what drew you to directing movies in the first place? I mean, this isn't your first film. This is one of several that you've done so far, and obviously, hopefully see lots more from you. So what kind of drew you to directing?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Hawaii, and I had always sort of wanted to see my culture and the people that I grew up with represented in a way that felt accurate and authentic to me in a way that I haven't really seen portrayed by Hollywood. And larger productions. I mean, Hawaii 5-0 is filming here, Magnum PI is doing stuff now, and that's great, but that doesn't really represent the Hawaii that I knew. So that was sort of one of the impetuses for me to try to do this work.
Fantastic. I mean, I was going to say that's one of the one I say, obviously, from my ignorant side over the other side of the UK, is Hawaii 5-0 is something that I do know and I've seen, but it does still seem very Americanized rather than the actual culture. But they do throw bits of the culture in there, which is, but it's like you say, it's not proper Hawaii culture.
Americanized is the right word.
Yeah. Yeah, Americanized happens quite a lot. to quite a lot of things, I think, sadly. Right. Well, I say sadly, but obviously, that's their take on it. So, I mean, that is great. And obviously, it's really nice to talk to someone who wants to bring out that, the culture of the country and the islands as well, because obviously, they are very unique. They're very individual. To the rest of the United States, they're part of the United States, but they're completely different, but you have got, you seem to have kept much more of the individuality in the culture in Hawaii. And I think that's what attracts people and draws people towards it, which is, it's really good.
Yeah, I agree. And, we're trying to preserve a lot of the culture that sort of, maybe got, I mean, systematically marginalized through, statehood and colonization. Mm-hmm. But there is this resurgence. There's this cultural resurgence happening right now, and it's very exciting. There's charter schools where they only speak Native Hawaiian to kids, and so there's a whole generation of kids that are growing up fluent in Hawaiian. So, along with reviving these other cultural practices, so it's a very exciting time. Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, I can sympathise with that because I live in Wales, and I know it's a very similar situation. The fact that the Welsh is a very strong you know, it's hundreds of years. We've got cultures go back hundreds of years, and language and customs and traditions, and they're trying to revive all those and trying to bring them and try, because obviously everyone just thinks of Wales. They even, you know, in America, it's like, where do you live? Wales? Oh, is that part of England? No, it's not, you know, it's like, no. So yeah, I really understand. That's right. I can understand that, and really respect and value what, you know, that whole revival of culture, and trying to push it out and get everyone to actually understand and appreciate it a lot more as well. So I, you know, from a little small country over in the UK.
That's cool. And I need to do my homework on Welsh culture, because
Celtic. It's okay. Admittedly, I don't actually speak Welsh, which is kind of negates the point I've just made. but my son's learning it, so that's, you know, that's what exactly we're trying to do in schools, just like you said you've been doing out there as well. So have you got any inspirations with film work as you're coming up with all the directors and everything there? Are there any ones that stand out to you that you really admire and think, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Taika Waititi has been a huge influence on me since, I mean, when I was in film school. He actually came to our class, and he showed his film Boy in like 2009 or 2010. Mm-hmm. So, and that was still, you know, before he obviously took this meteoric ascent to everything he's doing now, including Star Wars. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to see someone who looked like me or the people that I grew up with, this Polynesian man, be so successful in what he's doing, but also remaining true to who he is and where he's come from, he's really served as a model in a lot of ways.
Excellent. Yeah, he's just, yeah, like you say, he's just shot to boosted right up there, hasn't he? So even, I say, the Mandalorian that we were just talking about before I started recording, he's been doing that as well. Like you say, it's great to have that kind of an inspiration and that kind of someone you can look up to and sort of, you know, or aspire, who inspires you. Because I think it's a lovely word. It's like you aspire to inspire. So that's, you know, it's great. And I say I'm not going to fault him one bit, because he has done some amazing work across, and not just obviously with the Star Wars. Like you say, he's been around, he's about built up to get to there. And as everyone does, you know, you build it up, and he's fantastic work. And he's from New Zealand, isn't he, Taiki? Yeah, but Polynesian, so same sort of. Excellent, cool. Is there anyone like you'd love to work with as well? I was going to throw these questions out before we move on to talk about the film itself. Who would you love to work with at the moment out there?
I mean, I guess I have to. I mean, probably, you know. Mama would be pretty cool, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's I think his family is from the west side of Oahu, the island that I live in. So I think there's stories that he might be interested in telling that I'm probably interested in as well. So yeah.
Excellent. I have met him. He came to a Comic Con, Wales Comic Con, a few years back. He's huge. The guy's massive. Yeah. I think it was just as he was announced to play Aquaman, and he'd been doing obviously his Carl Drake, is it Drago? I can't never remember the name. Yeah, Game of Thrones. Yeah, but yeah, the guy is massive. He just commanded presence as well. So he's a great actor as well. We know he's fantastic. So
nice.
Especially as if he's homegrown as well, coming from the other side of where you live, the island where you live as well.
It'd be very cool to see his rise as well. Obviously, another New York rise.
Yeah, brilliant, excellent. So, I mean. Okay, so moving on to your new film. Guys, it's not your first film. You've had the fourth one you've directed now. If I'll Keep You Float, You've got Mauka Tamakai and Moraikura. Is that Moraikura?
You did a great job, actually. They're not easy names to pronounce, so I commend you.
Yeah, so I apologize to anyone when I do get them wrong. So obviously this is now your fourth film. And like we've already discussed, Hawaiian culture is very, very important to you. And it seems that coming from these films, and obviously especially with the new one, with the language used, some of which we'll get onto as well, and the aspect of it, you are very much trying to highlight proper Hawaiian culture rather than, you know, like we say, the Americanized version of it. You're pushing that to the fore, and I think that's what it stems from your movies there. So how did you come up with the idea for the latest one then?
So this idea germinated on I was attending a film festival last year in New Zealand, actually, in Aotearoa, called Māori Land, and I was housed. They put us up in a filmmaker house, and they housed me with this cinematographer, Chapman Hall, mm-hmm. Who I had sort of seen in here and there in Hawaii, but I never had like a real conversation with him up to the point when we were housed together and we attended the film festival together, mm-hmm. and we were so inspired by the amazing Māori films we were seeing and the indigenous films we were seeing from all around the world. And we talked about sort of ad nauseum how to sort of translate the inspiration and influences we were feeling into a project together when we got back home. And so he was going to be in Hawaii for a week, and he had his camera gear on him. And he said, if I could write something by the weekend, then he'll shoot it. So I took that as sort of a challenge, I guess, to see if something could be done to take advantage of his time. And my roommate Holden Mondrio Santos is the lead actor in our film, mm-hmm. and I kind of knew that he would be down to do something very quickly with little preparation. So that's what inspired me to set out and try to write this thing, and we're really grateful for the
Fantastic. How long did it take to shoot in total? Because obviously the film's just over a little over 8 minutes long, isn't it?
Yeah, it took about 7 hours, maybe.
Okay.
We shot it in that was the constraints we had, because we only had Chapin for that day and the actors mm-hmm. for that day. We didn't even really rehearse that much up until shooting. So I'm just really grateful that the actors, they found something in the material, I think, and they connected with it. And I didn't have to do much. They did
fantastic. And it does come across. I mean, you know, you say those guys come across on screen. It's very, very, it does portray a very powerful message when you're looking at it. Because, I mean, for those who've not seen it yet, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but obviously you start with, you're thinking what's going on here, because you've got the guy coming up to a kid sitting outside. It's all in one location as well, which is even, I suppose, handy for the cinematography kind of, you know, shaping. But you know, you've got the kid coming up to school and trying to talk to him and saying, yeah, your mum sent me and stuff like that. And you're like, you know, you start thinking, okay. you start immediately thinking, I know where this is going, but it doesn't. And as it goes, and so those the two characters in that scene, because obviously there are only the two in those, most of those scenes there, the little language they use Pidgin English as well. I think that's how it's called, Pidgin English as well. So was that another conscious effort to try and make it more genuine to the location of where it's set?
Yeah, 100%. Me and Holden grew up in Kaneohe, which is where we shot the film. Mm-hmm. And so we just grew up in a culture that spoke that Pidgin English in a really sort of unvarnished way, I guess, for lack of a better word. But like, it's, I find it really beautiful. And I, one of my pet peeves is when pigeon is portrayed in movies inaccurately or inauthentically, mm-hmm. I guess. So yeah, that's very, language is very important to me, and representing a pigeon in a way that feels authentic to us was really important as well. So yeah. Oh,
fantastic. And there's a difference as well, because even through that, you can, there's a generational difference. It comes very much across as well, just like it is a normal, you know. You see, I'll talk to my son and he, some of the words he comes out with, and I'm, you know, he'll say something called, like, something called, he'll say it's sick. For me, sick means like, but obviously it's all changed. How to, but obviously with the pigeon, you know, it was the difference and the background of the older guy. Now, I'm trying not to spoil it for anyone. You know, obviously the background from him, he's missed out on a lot of stuff anyway, probably from where he's been. And you can see that generational gap of the kids, you know, the words that he uses. Is it rubber? Was one of them. Is that one? I was trying to pick it out. Yeah.
Good job. You really internalized the film, so that's cool.
What does that mean? I can't remember.
His name is Austin Tucker, and that was his first time acting, and he did an incredible job. And I asked him basically like, oh, what's a word that, you know, you would use nowadays for basically like bad or this thing is terrible? And he's like, oh yeah, rubber. Okay. I never heard that as well. So
yeah,
we incorporated that.
Pretty cool. It's really great to see that, you know, that's what this film, it's only 8 minutes long, but there's so much story is told in 8 minutes. It's quite unbelievable. To get that through. So for people who are watching and listening to this interview and now, what can you tell me? What's the message that you want to people to take away from the film, from watching it?
Wow, that's a, you know, it's
deep
weird
question.
I've done a lot of interviews, but I feel like I've never been asked that question. I just hope that people come away with a better understanding of, you know, some of the socioeconomic realities that a lot of Native Hawaiians face in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's beautiful. It's, we're really grateful to live here, and we're really grateful to be Hawaiian, but you know, there's so many things that we deal with on the day-to-day that makes it really hard, I think, to enjoy a lot of the beauty that Hawaii has to offer. So, I mean, ultimately, like, you know, we're dealing with things that many other people are dealing with around the world. And so I hope to humanize us, or not us so much as like maybe trying to generate empathy for sort of the post-carceral life and the difficulties therein. And yeah.
Fair enough. That's a good answer. It's definitely very much as well, I also saw in a review, it's not mine, I'm going to take it from a review that I did see, some I can't claim credit for it, and it's very much a breathing community fighting hard to keep its own identity in the modern world as well, which is, you know, and so that's where we go back to the whales thing. So I can very much see, you know, that kind of, you're really pushing that across, and within an 8 minute story, as I say, I watched it for 8 minutes, and I've watched it, rewatched it again, because obviously I wanted to make sure I knew it. But it does affect you, and the whole way through, you go in, you're thinking that you're left wondering, because you leave it, you're very, very clever in the way you've let what viewer guess all the way through the film what this relationship is. I kind of was thinking possible. Again, this is probably a spoiler, so everyone says it's not a spoiler, but obviously left guessing the whole way through until the very end. And then there's that one line, isn't there? And it's like, he's my boy too. And it's like, really? Aren't they? you haven't found that out all the way through, because the relationship and the way they're talking is so, there's a reason obviously for why it is, but it's very stagnated and it's alien. Because both of them are struggling to identify with themselves as well as with each other, and desperation, definitely desperation in trying to make sure and come across and reach. And that's kind of where you're left for the full 8 minutes. You're like, you know, you're pushing and pushing, because you can see how hard it is for the father to try and approach a son who's obviously never really known. So,
yeah, you've really internalized the film, and that's cool. you're dead on.
Thank you. But yeah, so not much to say for that one. But yeah, so it's right. So it's cool. And as I say, I mean, the actors themselves, it was especially the other one, first time ever. So to actually be able to come across and put that kind of emotion, that kind of depth into it. And the fact you've told me it was all done with, like, within 7 hours and, you know, didn't really rehearse before, just shows how good they are and how good they will. You know, obviously the young lad, forgotten his name now.
Austin.
Austin, yeah, because how well he'll do in the future as well, because if he can do that now, you know, and pick that up straight away, that's how it can build on.
I agree. And yeah, part of the reason why I casted him is because I had seen him audition for a friend's film and he didn't get that role. But again, I really liked his elocution and he felt, you know, he brought in a verisimilitude, I think, to the role and to the language, and he's just a great kid, and I couldn't have asked for a better set mom as well. She just was hanging out and was very encouraging and happy to be a part of the process. So I'm just thrilled with their performances.
Fantastic. And I think I mentioned it earlier on as well, is because obviously you are award winning, not just with this one, but with previous ones as well. And this one won the Imaginative Film Festival, if I'm right, last year, best live action short, which I can see why. But that qualifies you now for the Academy Awards, to be considered for the Academy Awards next year, which is that must be a good feeling as well.
It's crazy. There were so many amazing indigenous films at Imaginative from around the world, and I really still can't believe it. But yeah, it's the whole thing has been just a surreal experience, and I'm honored to sort of represent Imaginative, and we'll see what happens.
Fantastic. Well, it'd be really good to see, obviously, to see it go far. I'm not being sycophantic here either. I'm just saying it would be nice to see that go far, because it's nice to always see such passion behind, I say, very much so. You can tell just talking to you in the last 20 minutes or so, the passion you have for your culture of Hawaii. And I'm going to pronounce Hawaii rightly, because I always say Hawaii and it's not, because I've been listening to how you pronounce it. Hawaii, is that right?
It is, yeah.
Oh, there, yeah. See, I've learned something new as well. I've mispronounced it so long, and it's great to see that. So it would be nice to see that pushed forward as well, and see more of that, because as great as TV shows, American TV shows and films are, because they are still Americanized. There's not much on the actual. On the true culture of places, and I love documentary type things as well, but I love seeing a film which draws on the strength of a community and draws on the strength of a country or even a region, because like you said, some of the language of the pigeon was, I think, specific to the region, very much so, of where you grew up, rather than you know, because I mean, in other parts of Hawaii, I'm presume it might not be as understood, right? Because it's just, it's like, yeah, regional, yeah, dialect type.
You're totally right. Each region has their own sort of variation of pidgin, I would say, and each island does as well. So yeah, I mean, again, just, you know, I feel like Hawaii is such a rich tapestry of people and stories just waiting to be told, and I feel just really grateful to be able to tell some of those stories. And there, it's a really exciting time just for Hawaiian film in general, because there's a lot of up and coming Native Hawaiian filmmakers that are doing really interesting things, and it's going to be an interesting sort of decade. I think we'll start to see a lot more stories, I think, from here permeate the larger media scape. So I'm excited.
Fantastic. I'm going to do a quick anecdote, which I'll take out, by the way. When you're talking about the dialects, I did German at university. I studied German. And we all went to live in Germany. Me, there's like the 12 of us in the class, and we lived around, but we all lived in different parts of Germany, because I that's why I love language. I love language. I love dialect. And probably why I picked this out as well, because I can, you know, trying to the regional side of it, because we all came back after a year and we'd all lived in different parts of Germany. And we had a class where we just had to speak to each other in German, and we all just sat there and was like, what? No one could understand what the other ones were saying, because we'd all picked up the regional dialects, which were totally different from everywhere else. They weren't standard German. It was just, like you say, like the pidgin English of Hawaii, in the different regions within. It's very interesting to see that even, you know, one country or one area of one country, you can still have so many different variations of the language. That's just my anecdote, which made me.
I mean, I agree. Language is a living, breathing thing, and it's constantly evolving. And it's in some places, it's more, you know, archaic than other places. And even that process, the way that it transforms or remains the same, is fascinating, and there's so many factors that go into that. So language is just so indicative of all of these elements, and it's just one of the reasons why I really love it and want to see it portrayed in the way that I, you know, that I know it and love it.
Excellent. And before I stop recording, Alika, is there anything you'd like to say for people who are watching or listening?
Just say, you know, as I mentioned, this film was really born out of this sort of challenge that was put to me by my cinematographer. But I mean, for me, I realized that it actually became quite helpful to try to construct the film within these constraints that I had, which was like, okay, we have to do this in a week. So it really has to be probably only one location, because that's just the only, you know, you only have the amount of time for that, and you probably want as little actors as possible, and you know, you want to, you make it as sort of simplified as you can, but then build it back up and build layers and stuff like that. So I think, like, for me, that was something I was really, I really relish that, because it can be, I think, quite intimidating to sit down and, you know, tell a story about anything with the amount of resources that you could have. So it was just a lesson in sort of trying to work within the confines of something, it's been a helpful experience for me, and one that I look to implement in future projects, and it helps to keep things focused. So, I would just say, like, you know, in general, as a filmmaker, you're not limited. You can use constraints that would be otherwise limiting to your advantage. So, yeah.